Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening up, well, quite a stack of source material. It gives us this stunning map of the literary landscape created by author M. Mehmet Unver.
It really does. His body of work is extraordinary. It spans millennia, continents.
And it consistently engages in some of the most provocative historical and, I guess, sociological critiques we've seen packed into fiction.
It's a massive undertaking, absolutely. Yeah. And our mission here really is to cut through that volume pretty quickly.
Okay.
We need to figure out his core strategy, how Unver uses historical fiction, mythological fiction, moving from the 7th century Middle East all the way to 16th century Europe,
right,
to systematically challenge these big established narratives, power, religious authority, those deep-seated societal taboos.
So for you listening, the goal is kind of a shortcut, to understanding this writer's pretty fierce intellectual contribution.
Exactly. A shortcut.
I appreciate the speed because this is, it's dense material. It's clear right from the start that Unver sees history not as some comforting story, but more like a mechanism, something to be interrogated.
Yeah, he really forces a reckoning with collective memory.
So let's start at the foundation. That seems to be the novel Ganymet Savaşları, The War of Spoils.
Right. This is where he really sets his most critical tone. Ganymet Savaşları takes us right back to the early period of Islam, the 7th century.
Okay.
And it places the concept of Ganymet spoils or war booty directly at the center of how history unfolded. The premise is, it's revolutionary for that context. The idea that the rapid expansion, the political fracturing, it was motivated just as powerfully by economic needs as by religious or ideological ones.
Okay. So this immediately sets up that framework he seems to use everywhere. The Dinikdar Ekonomina triangle. Religion, power, economy. It transforms the narrative, doesn't it? Early caliphate history isn't just a spiritual mission anymore. It becomes this, complex socio-political venture.
Yeah.
Built on wealth, how it's shared, and who gets to be legitimate.
And what's really crucial to grasp is the novel's style. It's unapologetically sharp.
Yeah, I picked up on that.
It's polemical, and it completely avoids idealizing historical figures. That's a major structural challenge to, traditional narratives.
It portrays the rise of this new religious state as, entirely pragmatic.
That's the word.
Pragmatic.
So take the central figures. The source material describes Muhammad as pragmatic, yes.
Right.
Focused on spreading the religion, sure, but just as concerned with setting up and keeping a stable socioeconomic order.
Right. For the community, the nascent community. And often using Ganymet as the mechanism to do it.
Exactly. And then after his passing, the source suggests the dynamic shift.
Right.
Towards more pure power consolidation.
Yeah, that's how it's framed. Figures like Ebu Bekir and Umar. They're portrayed as highly capable leaders, yes, but focused on centralizing authority.
Political realists, maybe?
Political realists, absolutely.
Yeah.
Capable of being swift, even severe, against opponents or anyone challenging that new order.
It sounds like he's not just telling history. He's dissecting how institutionalized power is born, using these figures almost as archetypes.
And that's a good way to put it.
But what about Ali? He's often the idealized figure in many accounts.
Right. And in Unver's portrayal, Ali represents the internal conflict. He is the idealist, but that idealism gets tangled up with sort of political fragility.
How so?
Well, he's constantly caught between tribal loyalties, the demands of his followers, and these huge expectations of religious leadership. It's almost impossible.
So he becomes the tragedy, the revolutionary who can't quite make the pure vision stick institutionally.
That's the sense you get. Yeah, the tragedy of that.
And the spoils themselves, the Ganymet, they become much more than just, camels or gold.
Oh, absolutely. They symbolize legitimacy.
Right. If the source of wealth, this war booty, isn't seen as being shared justly,
then the unrest, the societal breakdown, becomes almost inevitable. It's the point where how wealth is handled directly undermines the religious claim to lead.
So if we connect this historical story to today, it feels like the novel is serving as this profound, maybe indirect, critique of modern politics-religion relations, particularly in the Middle East.
I think that's exactly the intention described. By stripping away the comforting myths, by facing that historical trauma of religion quickly becoming a political power mechanism, Unver essentially holds up a mirror to contemporary issues. He's asking, what was the real engine driving these foundational institutions, not just the declared one?
And that analysis, centered on the injustice maybe in wealth distribution,
yeah,
that connects directly to understanding modern sectarian conflict.
It provides a lens, certainly. a very critical historical lens onto those modern conflicts.
That is a harsh reading of that early history. Uncompromising. But if his focus is the search for justice and maybe the failure of revolutionary hope, does that theme hold up when he jumps continents and centuries?
Ah, that's the interesting part. It seems the author is testing that exact question, right? Does power always corrupt? Are the weak always oppressed? He looks for these patterns in completely different settings.
So that thematic continuity is a key to seeing his kind of universal scope?
I think so, yeah. He pivots sharply from 7th century Arabia to 16th century Europe in Zingaranin Ashkenazi's Love.
Okay, Zingara's Love, and that deals with?
The 1525 German Peasant Wars and Thomas Munzer's radical revolts during the Reformation.
Wow, okay. So we leap from the foundational conflicts of Islam straight into the chaos of the Reformation and what, the biggest peasant uprising in European history?
Pretty much, yeah. And the connection is that search for justice.
How does it manifest there?
Well, in Germany, you see the same pattern, arguably. The weak, the peasants oppressed by the aristocracy, by the church establishment.
Right.
And Unver blends this huge class struggle, this fight for basic economic survival and dignity, with a very powerful individual love story. That's the Zingara character.
And the tragedy.
The tragedy lies in the crushing of that revolutionary hope. It echoes, in a way, the political divisions and failures seen centuries earlier in the Middle East.
And the source material points out how Martin Luther is positioned in this. He wasn't exactly cheering on the peasants, was he?
Oh, far from it. Unver, according to the analysis, carefully positions Luther as the moderate reformer.
Meaning?
Meaning Luther wanted spiritual reform, a cleaner link between man and God, getting rid of corruption in the church.
Okay.
But he drew a very stark line. He completely distanced himself from the peasants' demands for immediate social and economic justice. Things like ending serfdom, fair use of common lands.
So Unver seems to be showing us that across time, whenever a revolution starts, there's often this point where the, let's say, spiritual idealists, they choose stability, the establishment stability, over radical social change for the masses.
That seems to be the critique, that gap between the pure ideology and the messy reality of action, especially when power gets involved.
Yeah.
That's his constant target.
It's the eternal target.
Precisely. The moment the purity of the idea hits the, well, the brutality of economic and political survival, it gets compromised.
That structural critique. Apply globally. Okay, now we need to jump back. Back into mythology and modern identity. Let's talk about the MAD series, exploring the deepest roots in the Middle East.
Right, the MAD series. MAD 1, Özgür İnsan, which translates to free human, and MAD 2, Babel. This is fascinating because it dives deep into Sumerian and Babylonian mythology.
Figures like Enki, Inanna, Tammuz, those ancient gods.
Exactly. But Özgür treats these ancient myths not as sacred texts, but almost like early political records.
How does he manage that, turning gods into politicians?
By analyzing their motivations. The sources suggest he portrays them as driven by cunning, self-interest, rivalry, struggles for territory and power.
So he strips away the divinity.
Pretty much. He shows them as highly effective, sometimes ruthless, managers of early city-states. This reinterpretation just reinforces his core idea that power structures, hierarchy, they predate organized religion and are fundamentally political.
And the protagonist, Mad, he symbolizes the eternal searcher, the free person, trying to break free from every layer of dogma.
That's the idea, whether it's the rule of gods in Sumer, the rule of caliphs later on, or you know, the rule of modern political systems. It's this intellectual fight for self-determination that spans like 5,000 years.
Wow.
And that search for freedom and identity, it gets brought right into the modern painful context with the novel Vadens' Stateless.
Okay, Stateless. And here, Unver uses a fictional future, MS 2036.
Yeah, alongside the recent past, specifically confronting the traumas of the Saddam era in Iraq.
And the character Mad appears again, but this time he's Dilse's, speechless.
Yes.
How does that lack of language amplify the critique? What's the symbolism there?
Well, the speechless Mad comes to symbolize the universal stateless human. By being literally voiceless, Mad transcends just the regional conflict.
Ah, I see.
He becomes an emblem of the global refugee crisis, really. The novel uses this figure to talk about those ongoing historical conflicts. Kurdish, Turkmen, Arab identities, but asking less about who's right and more about what happens to the human being when politics strips them of identity, place, and voice. The crisis of the modern nation state, in effect.
That's powerful. History, myth, modern crisis, all rolled into one. Now, you mentioned earlier, Enver isn't just doing these grand historical epics. He also turns his sociological eye right onto contemporary Turkish society.
Absolutely. Taboo, subtitled The Book of Womanizing, is a really necessary departure, in a way. It focuses intensely on modern societal realism.
Just set in Ankara.
Set in contemporary Ankara, yeah. And it just dissects urban hypocrisy, the contradictions between traditional values and modern life.
Addressing things directly, like sex, love, family pressure.
Yes, all those social taboos. With a directness that the source material notes is quite rare in Turkish literature. He uses realism to expose the same kinds of gaps found in ancient history. The gap between what society says it believes and what people actually do.
And he continues that focus on modern identity, particularly diaspora memory, with Zingara Coburg.
That's right. This novel documents the Turkish and Kurdish immigrant experience in Germany. It's described as a vital record of diaspora memory.
Showing the daily grind, but also more.
Yeah, the daily grind of immigration, the jobs, the cultural friction, but blended with the political and even the mythic.
How so? The mythic?
Well, for instance, he incorporates traditional Newroz celebrations in Hanover, showing that resilient memory. But then he might occasionally blend real figures with mythological echoes, like equating a character named Helen with the goddess Inanna.
Okay. It's a way of saying that ancient struggles, the cultural weight, it travels with people, even to Coburg, Germany.
Exactly. The past is never really past.
This incredible breadth. I mean, from ancient gods to modern immigrants, from the Caliphate to the German Reformation, it forces us to ask the so what question. What really makes Unger stand out? How is he different from, say, historians or other thinkers who cover similar ground?
That's a great question. The source material offers some specific, pretty powerful comparisons to make that distinction clear.
Okay.
It notes he clearly shares that structural sociological critique of history you find in great historians like Edward Gibbon or Ibn Aldun, that understanding of how power and religion can corrupt.
Right, but they wrote academic analysis. Unusver's doing this through novels. How does using fiction enhance that critique?
Well, fiction allows him to confront trauma directly, doesn't it?
Mm.
It forces the reader to engage on an emotional level that academic history maybe often can't reach.
Makes sense.
By putting the critique inside a dramatic story, by showing Ali struggling or the peasants being crushed, he delivers the sociological insight, but with much greater immediacy. It sticks in your memory differently.
And what about comparisons to major literary figures, like, say, Goethe or Camus?
Good comparisons.
Yeah.
While someone like Goethe might focus more on individual passion or, you know, metaphysical questions, and Camus brilliantly explored the absurdity of the human condition and the search for meaning, Unver takes that search for self-determination and freedom, that very Camusian idea, and grounds it directly in specific, politically charged historical and sociological contexts.
So he doesn't look for the free human in the abstract.
Exactly. He looks for them amidst the spoils of war in Ganymede, or caught in the conflicts of modern nation-states in Vatansöz. He's not just a storyteller. The term used is Düşünür Yazar, a thinker-writer. Fiction is his tool for philosophical inquiry.
So his contribution, then, it seems like it's demanding a kind of radical honesty from us, the readers, forcing a reckoning with our collective memories by stripping history, whether it's religious or nationalistic, of its comforting myths and legends.
Absolutely. I think the ultimate contribution of this thinker-writer is exactly that. Fostering critical thought, demanding we re-examine our origins and understand how those ancient patterns of power, economy, maybe even hypocrisy still shape our present day, whether we're talking about big geopolitical conflicts or just, you know, daily life in Ankara.
This has been a really comprehensive look. An author using fiction as this profound tool for social and historical analysis. We've seen him combine mythology, fierce historical critique, urgent current issues into this compelling, diverse body of work that just constantly challenges assumptions about faith, power, identity.
And if there's one core question that seems to unite his entire body of work, running from ancient Babel all the way to modern Ankara, it's perhaps this, and this is what we'll leave you with today.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible? Is it possible for humanity to live a pure faith or pursue a pure ideal of justice, completely separate from the corrupting interests of political and economic power?
Hmm.
That question, maybe unavoidable, serves as the ultimate bridge between Unver's histories and, well, your present day life.